it is people want. What motivates them to give up their treasures? Gods, he's Varish's opposite. Our signets really aren't that different than mind work. I think you and I could strike a deal if you consider that I could deliver your wildest dreams. Zayden strokes my thigh absent-mindedly, but it helps keep me grounded. And what do you think my wildest dreams are? I ask. Peace, Takaris nods, his movements growing more erratic the more excited he becomes. Not for you, of course. That's not what motivates you. Peace for the people you love. Zayden's fingers still. Peace for him, Takaris finishes. My next breath is shaky. I'm listening. He presents his offer. And I have to admit, for a second, it's tempting. Spending a few years as his personal guard dog, monitoring the riderless wyvern who have begun flying over routinely in patterns that look suspiciously like control, in return for living out the rest of my days with Zayden, our dragons, and my loved ones, on an isle committed to peace sounds perfect. It's also the coward's way out and completely unfeasible. The Isles don't accept Navarians, even as visitors. Running away from the continent to whatever land you've secured from the Devarelli isn't going to help the people I like or the ones I don't even know. It's just that, running away. Takaris's jaw flexes, and I get the impression he's not used to being told no. Even if I give the Luminary to Tirindor. He glances at Brennan. Word spread quickly that Navarre let your cadets go without so much as a drop of blood spilled, though I do wonder why that is. Don't you? Yes. Every day. Dragons owe you no explanation, Brennan shrugs, and my sister just earned the Luminary. Or are you going back on your deal? I would never break my word. Takaris glances Zayden's way and leans forward onto the heavily embroidered forearms of his tunic. Everything we know about the Dark Wielders. He nods at the silver-browed general who slides a leather-bound book across the table to Brennan. My fingers immediately itch to open the cover. But I never said I would give you the Luminary if she wielded it. I said we would enter discussions. You have to be fucking kidding me. My hand tightens over Zayden's, like that's going to stop him from strangling the Viscount with shadows or me from losing absolute control of my power. I should have brought the conduit into the meeting. Then let's discuss. What do you want in exchange for us leaving with the Luminary today? Weapons? Brennan asks. Because that's what we're offering. The Luminary is useless here. But we'll put it to use supplying your drifts with the weapons they need for the Venon you can't capture. Hopefully the details of how they managed to catch that one are in the book. Weapons are a good start, Takaris agrees with a nod, his gaze sliding to Kat. And you take the 100 flyer cadets I've given shelter to after their academy was destroyed back to Aracia with the Luminary. I'm sorry, what the fuck? And what would you like us to do with your cadets? Zayden asks, tilting his head slightly. Griffins don't fare well at altitude. They've never been given the chance to adjust, Takaris argues. And I want you to educate them, just as I assume you are doing with the Rider cadets. Keep them safe. Teach them to work together. And we might have a chance of surviving this war. We've seen riderless wyvern patrolling the skies, no doubt reporting what they see instantly to their creators in the last few weeks. Our reports say they ventured as far west as Draethys. It won't help the flyers to stay safe here in the south, not when they want to fight. And who better to teach the flyers how to kill wyvern than dragon riders? Train with griffin flyers? Take Cat back to Erasia? I would rather face a dozen Venon, unarmed, without Terran or Andarna. There's no way to fly them into Tirindor, Mira points out. A muscle in Zayden's jaw flexes. There is, but there's no guarantee they'll survive it. We'll take the chance, Serena answers. It's the cadet's best shot at living long enough to fight the Dark Wielders. This is my offer. Take it or leave it, Takaris demands. There's no way. Done, Brennan answers, as long as each flyer we take brings a crossbolt with them. I'm going to throttle my brother. An excerpt from Chapter 2, The Tactical Guide to Defeating Dragons by Colonel Elijah Jobin. From the dangerous waves of the Arctile Ocean to the lowest plains of the Tirindor Plateau, the cliffs of Draelor rise to over 12,000 feet in places, making them unflyable by Griffin. While there are three well-carved paths within Navarre to ascend the plateau, along the Crovelin border exists only one, and it is deadly to both Griffin and Flyer. Do not attempt under any circumstances. Chapter 43. My neck aches as I stare up and up and up the cliffs of Draelor, to where they disappear into a thick layer of cloud cover. It's been 4 days since we struck the deal with Takaris. 3 nights ago, we delivered the Luminary, a ring nearly as tall as Sigale of vibrant blue crystals, to an offshoot of the valley above Erasia, where the new forge is located. Yesterday, all cadets were ordered to get a good night's sleep, pack for a 3-day mission, and assemble for flight formation at 4 in the morning. And now, we're standing in a field west of Draethys, eyeing the drifts gathered on the other side of First Wing, as the sun burns off the early morning haze. He can't be serious, Riddick says beside me in formation, his neck craned at the same angle as mine. Between the 100 Erasian cadets and an equal number of flyers packed into this grassy field, I'd guess 95% of us look exactly the same, gawking at the steep, barely visible, narrow trail my brother just pointed at with absolute incredulity. The series of ledges and switchbacks carved into the granite cliff looks more suitable to a mountain goat than a griffin, and blends so well into the terrain that it's no wonder the Madaro Pass has been kept secret. Until now. Agreed, Vissia nods. He has to be kidding. That's not a trail, it's a death trap. The path Brennan's so excited about isn't wide enough to support a full wagon, let alone the width of a griffin. And he wants them to hike it? For us to hike it with them while dragons fly patrol. Pretty sure he's serious, or we wouldn't all be here, Rhiannon says over her shoulder. What the hell does he expect us to do besides climb with them? Arik asks, keeping his voice down.
Catch them if they fall off, Riddick suggests.
Right, because we're capable of catching a griffin, Imogen remarks. My brow furrows as I study the steep trail. It's not the narrow path or even the griffin traps, Brennan described, that worry me, but my own endurance. 12 hours of constant climbing is going to torture my knees and ankles.
Watch your back,
Zayden warns, his voice already fading as he flies east with Sigale on a mission I'm not privy to.
I didn't have time to question every flyer about their intentions.
As if his personal recommendation would help the lack of trust between our two colleges. You've already warned me, I remind him, feeling him slip away. Don't die. I'll see you in a few days. There's a rush of warmth, and then it fades along with his shadowy presence in my mind. Ahead of me, Baylor covers a jaw-cracking yawn with his fist as Brennan continues to lecture us about the length of the journey ahead from where he stands on a bound stack of crossbolts, amplifying his voice over the field. The journey should take you 12 hours, though I recommend taking time to rest along the trail. His gaze scans over us, as if gauging our reaction, which is mostly speechless. The only sound is the fall breeze rustling the leaves from the scrub oak trees at the south end of the field. Even the dragons and griffins fall silent around us, as if they can't quite believe what's being suggested either.
So they can push us off? A rider from Third Wing asks, and I don't think he's joking.
That question is exactly why you'll be going with them, Brennan says, avoiding my gaze entirely as Serena climbs up the pile of bound crossbolts to stand with him. Not only have the wing leaders been given the locations of the griffin traps to disarm them, but you need to learn some mutual respect and trust before you can be educated together. No rider will respect a cadet who hasn't crossed the parapet. He gestures at the trail behind him. Behold, a parapet for them to cross.
It's narrow, but it's not that narrow, Riddick calls out, earning a few scoffs of agreement from the riders around us.
And if we were just risking ourselves, perhaps it would be appropriate to deem it inferior to your death bridge at Basgaiath, Serena states, clasping her hands behind her back and facing the riders half of formation. Sunlight catches on the palm-sized metal rings that fall at the fronts of her shoulders, connected to the leather above.
But consider while you climb, while you decide if you'll truly accept flyers into your ranks, her gaze catches mine, that while this trail is perfectly safe for humans, it's perilous for griffins. And ask yourself if you would risk the lives of your dragons climbing a trail built specifically to kill them into hostile territory so you can learn how to better destroy your enemy with the very people you considered your enemy up until last week.
Riders all around me shift their weight. She's right, I tell only Tarn, since Andarna is more than a 3-hour flight away, no doubt in the midst of her morning training with the elders. Yesterday, she almost managed a full wing extension. Almost. I wouldn't risk either of you.
Of course you wouldn't. Why would you, when I'm quite capable of carrying you all over the world?
I can feel his eyes roll.
You did not bond the inferiority that are griffins. You bonded dragons. Take them for a walk and let them prove themselves.
The way the flyers look at us is more like they expect us to prove ourselves.
You were chosen by dragons. That is enough.
Each squad will be paired with a drift of equal strength to make the ascent, Brennan says. Hopefully, by the time you reach the top, you've found some mutual ground on which to build a framework of partnership. This is all in the spirit of camaraderie?
Highly doubt it, Riddick mutters.
In the meantime, your dragons will remain close, Brennan asserts.
I'll never be more than a minute's flight away, Tarn promises. Have fun hiking.
I hold him to it when we're given our assignment. Cat's Drift. 3 hours later, my calves are screaming from the constant climb, and the silence in our small forced group has grown from uncomfortable to painfully awkward. Removing my right hand from the sheer rock wall, I adjust the weight of my pack on my shoulders to ease the growing protest in my spine and check on Sloane. She's climbing steadily a few feet in front of me, giving the griffin ahead of her plenty of room to flick its lion-like tail. We're climbing single file, with Fourth Wing leading the way. Only Claw section is above us. The trail itself is challenging, although not unpassable, and while up to 6 feet wide at parts,
It narrows to a quarter of that in places where the path has disintegrated, leaving gaping holes that have the humans hugging the cliff wall to get by. Every time we reach one, the griffins stretch their grappling talons across while balancing on clawed back paws, and I find myself holding my breath that they make it, considering the ones we're walking with are easily a couple of feet wider than the path. I'm surprised only two have fallen that I know of. They're able to catch themselves for now, but at higher altitudes, it could get ugly. I look back at Marin, the flyer I've been paired with until evening, and her griffin as we approach an already triggered trap. The battering ram-sized log now lying harmlessly along the cliff wall where the path narrows. Be careful here. Right at chest height. Nice. She offers me a pressed lip smile. She's petite for a flyer, though still taller than me, with a heart-shaped face under dark hair woven into a long single braid that falls along the bronzed ochre skin of her neck. Her dark hooded eyes meet mine without hesitance every time I look back to make sure she's still following, which earns my respect. But she's also Kat's best friend, which has me watching my back in more ways than one. I look back again to make sure they pass safely. I'm not going to fall off the cliff, she promises, as we make the sharp turn of the fourth switchback. Or maybe it's the fifth? The curves are the only places on the trail wide enough to walk in pairs. Neither is Dajalair. The brown and white griffin's front left claw slips off the trail, and her talon screeches against rock with the most god-awful sound I've ever heard as she regains her balance. Sloane and I trade a look that's surprisingly empty of hostility. Are you certain about that? I ask Marin, as all three of us pause, watching to see if any stones break off the rocky terrain. Anything that falls can be deadly to those climbing below us. The griffin arches over Marin and snaps its beak in my direction. Yeah, that thing could definitely crush my head. Got it. You're certain, I say, putting up my hands and praying to Dune that griffins don't punish humans for speaking to them like dragons do. Marin nods and scratches the feathered chest of the griffin. She's sure-footed and a little temperamental. The griffin makes a chortling sound and we begin walking again. The narrow ledge is exactly why they aren't allowed to fly any portion of the cliff. There's no guarantee they'll be able to stick a landing without causing a rock slide and killing everyone beneath them. Even if she fell from this height, we'd just have to fly down and start again, Marin says like a peace offering. It's the upper portion of the trail that worries me. Another 5,000 feet, and she'll struggle to beat her wings. She's not meant for the summit wing drifts. Summit wing drifts? I can't help but ask. Those best suited for altitude, for flying the summits of the Esben Range, she explains. Daja might not want to admit it, but she's a lowland girl. Her smile brightens, even as the griffin snaps her beak rapidly a foot away from Marin's ear, like you wouldn't rather be stationed with the sea wing drifts after graduation. She laughs softly. No doubt it's something the griffin said. That's what I thought. Trust me, we don't want to be headed into Tirindor any more than you want us to be there. So I come, Sloane asks, walking too close to the next griffin and getting flicked in the face by its tail. Like Serena said, it's our best chance of survival, not just for us, but for our people, too. After another few minutes of tense silence, I ask, So where are you from? Draethys, Marin answers. I'd ask about you, but everyone knows you grew up moving outpost to outpost until your mother was assigned to Bazgaeth. My footsteps almost falter. Sloane glances back at me with raised eyebrows. You've been a hell of a ransom target, Marin explains as we come to a series of carved steps meant to deter wagons.
Honestly, most of us figured Ryerson would nab you after harvest his first year and gift you to us.
You mean Cat figured. Sloane's tone has suspicious bite.
Cat definitely figured, Marin agrees.
Harvest?
I ask, skipping over the whole Zayden should have kidnapped me insinuation.
You mean threshing?
Right. Marin checks on Daja's progress on the stairs before continuing upward. Whatever it is you call it, when your dragons either kill you or choose you.
So our entire first year,
Sloane laughs. Imagine our surprise when he shows up ready to defend you to the death last year. I look back at her because I don't hear the animosity I'd expect. There's none of it in her eyes either.
Were you disappointed?
She shrugs, the metal rings at her shoulder catching the sunlight with the motion. I was disappointed for Kat, but I wasn't exactly rooting for that toxicity any more than you would for your best friend.
She's the one up there with Kat now, right? Your squad leader?
I nod, moving forward along the narrowing stairs, keeping my body as close to the cliff wall as I can without scraping up my flight jacket.
Rhiannon doesn't want Kat trying to hurl me off the trail.
She probably would have, Marin admits, a smile in her voice. She's a little
unhinged,
Sloane offers, keeping a good 10 feet between her and the griffin ahead of her, with Riddick, Vissia, and the flyer. I think that one is Luella, but I'm not completely sure.
Hopefully she doesn't try any of her mind work on Rhiannon, or she might find herself dangling off the edge. Rhi isn't someone to mess with.
My eyebrows rise.
Shocked?
Sloane says over her shoulder at me, keeping her hand on the cliff wall as we reach the end of the stairs.
Don't be. Liam didn't hate many people, but Kat was on that list.
Right, because he and Zayden were fostered together. He would have met her.
Angry, Marin corrects her.
I was going to say angry, and relax, Sloane. None of us would dare channel power from our griffins when they need to stay completely focused on not falling to their deaths.
At least it's not just me you hate.
I bite back a smile at Sloane.
I don't hate you.
Sloane says so quietly that I almost question hearing it.
It's hard to hate you when Liam didn't.
My confused look must be enough for her to continue.
I'm in the October letters now.
Ah, when Zayden forced him to become my bodyguard.
We turn at the switchback and start the next ascent. This one cut a little steeper into the harsh gray rock of the cliffside. I look up and immediately regret the decision. My stomach churning at the view that's nearly identical to the one below. It's cliff and more cliff.
We both knew my brother well enough to say for certain that no one forced him.
Sloane replies, her shoulders dipping.
I just wish Zayden had asked someone else. Anyone else.
Me too, I admit in a whisper, focusing on my footing where the path has crumbled to nothing more than a few yards.
Look out! Panicked voices call out above us. Our attention jerks up. The sky is gray and falling rapidly toward us. It's not sky. It's a boulder. We're about to become debris thanks to a triggered trap. Take cover! I shout, throwing up my hands and pushing back against the cliff wall, making myself as small as possible while I reach for Tarn's power as a boulder hits the edge of the ledge, an ascent above, and barrels toward us. My heart beats in my ears. It's just like turning a door handle, just like twisting a lock. It's a lesser magic. I can do lesser magics. With a boulder the size of a feather tail, I envision the boulder changing course and twist my hands. Black streaks through my vision a second before an explosion sounds above me, and I cover my head with my hands as pebbles rain down. Tarn pulverized the boulder with his tail. Thank you. I sag back against the rock wall and take a couple of deep breaths to slow my hammering heart. Vi! Rhiannon yells from up ahead. We're all right! I shout back.
Holy shit. Marin leans next to me, her hand on her chest.
Morning, Startail?
Sloane asks.
Morning, Startail, I confirm,
watching Tarn level out, then fly back our direction. Within seconds, he's hovering in front of me with precise beats of his wings, his golden eyes narrowing. Marin ducks her head and Sloane looks away.
Hey, that wasn't my fault. I didn't slip.
I lift my brows at him.
It would be a shame to have gone through the last year just to have you kill us on a measly hike.
I scoff.
Noted.
He flexes his wings, air gusting against my cheeks before he dives again.
Is, that normal? Marin asks as we resume the trudge, my heart pounding through the surge of adrenaline.
Which part? Tarn saving my ass or being grumpy about it? Because, yes, both are normal.
When you walk your parapet, there are rocks thrown at you? She clarifies.
Oh, I shake my head. No, you just have to cross it, which is harder than it sounds.
What do you go through to be chosen?
We walk to the edge of Cliffsbane, look out over the river, it's about 30 feet deep at that point, and wait for the drifts to fly by.
Her tone lightens, and when I glance back, she's smiling.
When they approach, we jump.
You jump?
Sloane whips her head back, her eyes wide. Marin nods, and a dimple forms in her cheek.
We jump, and if we can land on a griffin, climb into position and hold on, they bond us.
She reaches up and scratches under Daj Alair's chin, where beak turns to feather.
That's pretty badass, Sloane admits begrudgingly. What happens if you miss? Do the bodies wash up on the shore?
We both pause, turning fully to watch Marin respond.
Have to admit, I'm curious too.
Marin blinks.
Bodies? No one dies. It's just like cliff jumping. If we miss, we swim to shore dry and shake off the embarrassment, and pick another branch for service. Infantry and artillery are popular.
Sloane and I exchange another look.
You just
swim to shore, I say slowly.
Yeah, Marin nods, then points between Sloane and me. And before you ask, it's you all who are the weird ones, killing cadets on your conscription day.
I draw back, letting her words sink in.
Technically, they're candidates, Sloane mutters. We're only cadets once we cross.
Well, I guess that makes it better, Marin quips sarcastically.
Hey, are we moving or what? Sawyer calls from behind us. Moving, I answer, then turn and keep hiking up the incline as a pulse of star-bright energy courses down the bond from Tarn.
Whoa, Sloane says, putting her hand over her heart.
What was that?
I felt it too, Marin blinks. Aracia's first hatchling has chosen to emerge, Tarn tells me, his tone clipped, considering the news.
We have hatchlings? I grin. Why don't you seem happy about it?
The hatchling's choice transforms the valley back into a hatching ground. It changes the magic. Every channeling creature within a 4-hour flight of the valley will know.
That's just us. We're on the edge of about 3 hours away. I glance around, noting that the others seem to be in conversation with their bonded ones, too.
Well, us and the flyers, and they'd find out once we get there anyway.
My smile widens at the thought of an Aracian-born feathertail.
We have to trust them for this to work.
I suppose we do.
By late in the afternoon, I'd rather commend my soul to Malik than take another fucking step up this never-ending trail. No wonder Tirindor never suffered an invasion from Poramil. Their troops would either be exhausted or dead, picked off by patrolling dragons by the time they reached the top. Every muscle aches, somehow simultaneously burning with exertion, yet stiff from how calculated my steps have become the higher we've climbed. As a result of the dizziness, I can't quite shake.
Even reciting facts in my head isn't making it feel connected to my body anymore. My heart beats at a humming, stressed pace, and I would give almost anything to lean against the cliff on my right, stop, and rest for an hour. Or two. Or four.
We've halted at least twice in the last hour. The griffins are slowing to a pace that's starting to make me worry about reaching the top at all, but at least none have fallen to their deaths. And the fights breaking out between flyers and riders aren't helping either. We've had to stop the march 3 times just to switch up where certain cadets are walking. Brennan might be right that we'll respect the flyers for having climbed, but a day-long hike isn't going to solve the years of hatred we've borne for each other. The afternoon is extra fun as we enter a thick layer of cloud that only allows 12 feet of visibility, and our progress slows to what feels like a crawl.
Hopefully these clouds mean that we're close to the top, right? Marin asks, glancing with concern at Daja, whose steps have grown slower with each ascent. Her head hangs, and her feathered chest rises faster, shallower with every step. Hypoxia. Marin's in the same condition, as is the pair in front of us. Sibylair and his flyer, Luella. His silver-specked wings aren't just tucked in at his side, they're drooping. While we riders have been conditioned in the mountains surrounding Bezgaeth and often fly at 12,000 feet, the flyers can't say the same. The highest mountain in Poromiel tops out around 8,000 feet. Which explains why only the summit wing drifts would carry out the high-altitude village raids we heard about in Battle Brief. Even Sloane looks worried.
Let me check how much farther we have to go, I tell Marin, softening my tone.
Please tell me we're almost off this damn cliff.
You feel closer, perhaps 3 or 4 ascents from the top, Taren answers. But none of us can see a thing through the fog. Claw section is cresting now.
I think we have less than an hour left. I offer Marin what I hope is an encouraging smile, but probably looks like a weary grimace.
You sure you can't just pick them up in your claws like the crossbolts and fly them to the top? I ask Taren.
They'd never tolerate the indignity of it. Besides, all they have to do is crest the cliffs. We have wagons waiting to carry the ones who will allow it.
Right, because they can't fly to Aracia. Not in this condition.
We can make it an hour, Marin says between huffed breaths. Luella, she calls ahead. It should be about another hour. Are you holding up?
We'll make it, a weak voice responds ahead of the silver-specked griffin.
Sloane braces a hand on the cliff and looks back at me.
She and Vissia have been arguing, she whispers. It's getting quieter, but I can't tell if it's because they worked out their differences or because Luella can't breathe. And I think she just threw up.
Altitude sickness, I respond just as quietly.
And you don't have to whisper, Marin states. Griffins have remarkable hearing.
Just like dragons. I mutter, no privacy.
Exactly,
Marin scratches just above Daja's beak, reminding me of that spot above her nostrils that Endarna likes.
Gossiping busybodies, she says with affection.
Don't worry, Luella will win her over. She's the nicest of us.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Sloane slows, waiting for us to come up with her.
Vissia's family was killed in the Summerton raid last year.
Lou wasn't even a cadet when that happened, Marin argues between shallow breaths.
If riders torched Draethys, Sloane quips, arching a brow, would you care if you were walking with someone from the Northern Wing? Or would you simply loathe all riders?
Good point, Marin admits, but it's hard to hate Luella. Plus, she bakes really good cake. She'll win Vissia over with butterscotch once we get to Aracia. Just watch.
A flash of dragon wing appears through the fog, cutting through the cloud like a knife before disappearing again.
At least they're still trying to do patrols, Sloane says as we continue forward.
Brave, considering they can't see the cliff's edge, I add.
A wave of tension, of awareness, barrels down my bond with Taren.
Guess he's not too happy about the lack of visibility either.
Not there, a familiar voice shouts up ahead, and the line halts. You'll trigger it.
Dane. What the fuck is he doing back here?
Sloane mutters. It doesn't matter how many times I explain that Dane didn't understand the consequences of stealing my memories. Sloane still despises him.
There's an overwhelming part of me that still does, too. Cibba Lair begins moving, picking his way carefully up the path, and we follow, eventually coming to where Dane stands rigidly against the cliff wall, making himself as small as possible so the griffin will be able to pass by.
There's a pressure trigger, he warns, gesturing to a section of the trail just ahead of him, with a map clutched in one hand and holding out his other arm so Riddick and Luella don't continue. We know it sends out arrows, but don't know from where, so we can't disarm it. Hence why I'm standing here warning everyone about that particular section.
I glance up at the cliff wall, noting the numerous cracks in the face that could hide any number of munitions. Then back to the trail, where a rope has been laid across the rock to mark the untouchable area. It looks to be 5, maybe 6 feet across, which would already give me a little pause on the ground, but jumping an area that big on an unforgiving ledge at our level of fatigue, let alone the griffins, is flat out intimidating. And I can barely see a damn thing past the rope in this fog.
We have to jump, Riddick says, eyeing the trail. Everyone's made it across so far. Dane nods.
Luella?
Marin leans out over the cliff to see past Cibba Lair.
A small flyer with pale, nearly white hair and freckles that remind me of Sawyer looks back.
I don't know. It's farther than I've ever jumped before.
She's the smallest of us. Marin doesn't bother whispering.
Like you, Sloane adds, looking my way.
Riddick, can you and Dane throw her across? I ask.
You mean, can I throw you across? Riddick asks with his typical sarcasm.
I snort.
I'll be able to jump it.
Like hell is Riddick going to throw me? Luella's head draws back in offense.
Shit. I'm used to the altitude, I remind her, hoping to cover my accidental insult.
What has everyone else done? I ask Dane.
Running leap, he answers.
We're just making sure whoever's on the other side is done recovering first, so there's no impact.
Gods, I wish Zayden were here. He'd simply pluck Luella up with shadows and ferry her across. Then again, he just might let her fall. I never quite know when it comes to other people.
Rhiannon can't retrieve something as big as a person. Sienna, our executive officer from last year, is up there, but wind wielding isn't going to help here either. Our signets are useless for this.
You jump first, Riddick, Dane orders.
So I'm not throwing Luella?
She either makes it or she doesn't. Just like parapet, Vissia says, tying her shoulder-length hair back. I'll go first.
Sibby says he goes first, Luella announces.
Then all three flatten themselves against the cliff wall next to Dane so the griffin can pass.
Sloane's right. Luella's physically similar to me, small and shorter than average. She's even my age since flyers start a year after riders. But she's suffering from altitude sickness, and I'm not. I'm just lightheaded, which might be a death sentence up here.
The tip of another dragon wing appears in the mist, the flight pattern coming from the opposite direction. A brown, maybe?
Is that Atrum?
I ask Riddick. At this point, I'm about to beg for his aid, flyer pride be damned.
No. He's up top with the others. They just finished carrying the crossbolts and complaining about being treated like pack horses.
A corner of my mouth rises. Sounds about right.
Sibilair rocks back on his fawn and ochre haunches, then launches forward, clearing the trap and skidding on his landing. Luella sucks in a breath as Sibby's talons skim the edge, but he quickly sags against the cliff, his back rising and falling with stuttered breaths. I'm torn between sighing with relief that the griffin made it and acknowledging the growing pit in my stomach that tells me there's no way Luella will. Mind asking him if he'd serve as a railing? I ask the flyer. We're both going to have to run and leap, and he'd be good at keeping us both from falling off the cliff. Sibby's head cranes back at an unnatural angle, and he chortles aggressively in my direction. A small smile tugs at Luella's mouth. He reluctantly agrees.
Vissia and Riddick, get over there, Dane orders. We need to keep the line moving.
Vissia backs up to where we stand, bounces up on her toes and runs, pumping her arms and legs, then launches herself across the roped-off area and lands cleanly on the other side.
See? If she can do it, we're fine, I assure Luella, hoping it's not a lie.
She's 6 inches taller than us, and not nearly as winded, Luella swallows.
And no offense, but you look like you're about to pass out.
I'm not, I lie, taking a second to adjust the slipping wrap on my left knee. I haven't had enough water or enough time off my feet today, and my body is more than happy to let me know about the neglect. Gods, I never would have made it through Gauntlet if I'd felt like this that day. Gauntlet. An idea takes hold. Riddick starts. Wait a second. I brace my right hand on the cliff to keep from losing my precarious balance and study the area above the trap, noting one of the thinnest cracks in the rock. Riddick's the best climber we have, so it just might work.
What are you thinking? Dane asks. Don't tell me nothing. You have those little lines between your eyebrows.
I'm wondering how attached Riddick is to his sword. I breathe through the nausea that always accompanies the dizziness.
It's standard issue, Riddick replies, then follows my line of sight.
Oh, you're thinking, yep, I glance at Luella so he catches on, and he nods slowly.
I can't guarantee it will hold.
Try, I lift my brows. Riddick reaches for his sword.
No.
Dane draws his short sword, leaving the long one sheathed.
Use this one.
It has a longer pommel and will be easier to work in. He hands the sword to Riddick, then looks over at me.
I still know how your mind works.
Sloane scoffs. Riddick takes Dane's short sword and sheathes it in the empty spot at his left, then climbs up a few feet before scrambling horizontally across the cliff face.
What is he doing? Luella asks.
Watch, I say quietly so I don't startle Riddick. Hand over hand, he carefully moves across the rock, then plants his feet on a foothold that I can't even see, let alone trust, about halfway across. He frees the short sword, drawing his elbow back as far as he can without losing his balance. Then jabs it into the cracked rock with full force. The screeching sound is worse than a pissed-off griffin.
Rock, he says to Dane, reaching back with his right hand.
Dane picks up a loose one, the size of my fist, then stretches his long arms out toward Riddick, handing it to him. Riddick slams the rock against the pommel, hammering it deeper into the cliff until almost every inch of the blade has disappeared, and I don't miss the slight flinch on Dane's face. Riddick grips the hilt and tests it with one palm, then two. I hold my breath when he drops all his weight onto it, and thank Dune it doesn't give. He rocks his body backward, then swings forward, letting go at the height of his arc and landing on the other side of the rope.
This might work.
And suddenly, this is the gauntlet, not parapet, Sloane mutters.
Easy, Riddick says, then pivots to face me and holds out his arms.
Let's go, Vi. I'll even catch you.
Fuck off,
I lift my middle finger but grin across the haze at him. I'm really hoping you're right-handed, I say to Luella. She nods.
Good.
That hilt is 8 inches.
7, Dane corrects.
Imagine a man actually shortening a girl's estimate, Marin teases. I can't help but smile.
Right, 7 inches. Just have to jump far enough to grab it, then swing across like Riddick.
Luella looks at me like I told her we'll be climbing the rest of this cliff by hand.
Want me to go first? I offer.
She nods.
Please take the dizziness, and I swear I'll build you a bigger temple in Aracia. I pray to Dune. But maybe that plea should be aimed at Zanal, because damn do we need some luck.
Butterflies attack my stomach.
You sure? Dane asks.
I level a glare at him.
You're sure?
He restates it as fact, then backs up to give me more room. I bounce up on the balls of my feet, then spring forward, planting that last step just before the rope and leaping toward the hilt.
I feel every beat of my heart marking time as I'm airborne. Reach it, reach it, reach it.
My right hand makes contact first, and I grip hard, slamming my left into the available space and holding tight as my body swings so I don't fly forward and trigger the trap.
You've got this, Riddick shouts, holding out his arms.
I will kick you in the face if you try to catch me, I warn. He grins and backs up a few steps as I take breath after breath, pushing back the blackening edges of my vision with sheer will, refusing to let the dizziness win. I will not fucking die today.
Rocking my body back, I start to swing, just like I'm on a gauntlet obstacle, whipping my feet forward and back. When I have enough momentum, I mutter another prayer and let go, flying toward that rope line. I hit the other side, and pain explodes in my knees as I fall forward, catching myself with my palms.
You made it, you made it, you made it, I chant, forcing the pain into a neat little box and shoving a lid over it and stumbling to my feet.
A quick sweep of hands tells me I haven't dislocated my kneecaps, though the left argues that it came damn close to abandoning ship.
See? I force a smile to my face and turn. You can do it!
Marin pats Luella on the shoulder, and whatever she says makes the smaller flyer nod as I back up, moving toward the center of the ledge and giving her space to land.
She takes the obstacle just like I did, her feet kicking for distance before she reaches the hilt and holds tight.
There you go, I shout. Now swing until you feel you have the force to carry you.
I can't, she cries out. My hands are slipping.
Shit, you can, Dane encourages, but you'd better move now.
Move, Luella, Marin yells. Luella starts the same rocking pattern Riddick and I used, swinging her feet to gain momentum. Then, let's go. I hold my breath as she hurtles toward the line of safety. Her feet land just before the rope, and her eyes lock on mine, widening with terror as she throws herself forward, like the trap won't notice her misstep if she's quick enough.
Oh, fuck. Maybe Dane's wrong. Maybe the trap is 12 inches before the rope line. Maybe she's in the clear. Maybe we all are. But clearly, I have prayed to the wrong god. Everything somehow slows and yet happens at once. Luella dives forward, hurling her body where she was looking, at me, instead of Sibylair, and I barely have time to open my arms before she impacts, driving me backward at an angle into Vissia, toward the edge of the cliff.
Vi! Riddick shouts.
I try to pivot, to heave as much of our weight toward the safety of the wall as I can, but there's not enough time or strength as we flounder, tangled in one another. Feet trip other feet, and I start to fall. We all do. A hand grasps the waistband of the back of my leathers and pulls, changing the direction of my fall.
Riddick, my feet lose traction as my momentum shifts, and I hit my knees near the edge of the cliff, just in time to see Vissia and Luella start to slide over. And I can no longer stop time.
No! I scramble forward, rock scraping over my torso, and throw out my arms, reaching for whoever is closest, as a sound like gushing wind rushes over my head.
Vissia grabs hold of my left hand, and Luella grips my right wrist, the weight of both women nearly taking me to join them.
My right shoulder pops from the socket, and agony rips from my throat with a scream.
Vissia fumbles for a handhold along the cliff wall, but Luella has both hands locked on my wrist, her feet kicking for purchase.
Pull me up! Luella shrieks, and I'm in too much pain to verbalize that I can't.
Riddick! I shout, as the edges of my vision blur, then blacken.
Help me!
Feet pound, but Luella's grip slips from my wrist to my hand, and I chance a look back over my right shoulder, hoping for rescue as Vissia's weight disappears, plucked from the side of the cliff by a giant beak.
Sibby. Vissia was in his way. The griffin dumps the rider on the ledge and then cranes his enormous neck toward Luella as bootsteps race down the ascent. But all I see is Riddick staggering backward toward the wall, two arrows piercing the side of his abdomen.
I'm all right,
he nods quickly, glancing down at the arrows, blood trickling from his mouth. No, 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 I scream up the cliff for the only person who can save him now. Brennan!
An excerpt from Chapter 1, The Cannon of the Flyer. When a griffin bonds, it does so for life. Guard your life as you would your griffin's, for they are forever intertwined. Chapter 44. Booted feet scurried toward me from both directions, and Sloane grabs hold of Riddick as Dane hits his knees beside me, then lunges forward, reaching for Luella at the same moment Sibby does. I rip my gaze from Riddick's and focus on Luella's hazel eyes as she slips down my limp fingers.
Hold on, I demand. They just need another second. But she slips farther, and Sibby's beak closes on nothing as she loses her grip and falls, the cloud swallowing her whole.
Luella!
A woman shouts from the left. Sibylair screams, and the shrill sound vibrates through my chest as I stare and stare and stare at the space where Luella was, as if she'll somehow emerge from the mist. As if there's any chance she's alive.
Damn it!
Dane quickly pushes back onto his knees. Vi, I can't move. My voice drops to a whimper. My shoulder's out. Any second the adrenaline will wear off and the true pain of the injury will hit.
All right. His tone immediately softens. I've got you.
His hands wrap around my ribcage, and he carefully lifts me to my feet, my right arm hanging uselessly at my side. Sibby's screams become a keening wail.
Something feels wrong,
Tarn says. It's all fucking wrong.
You dropped her!
Kat charges toward us from the other side of Sibby, fury rightfully etched in every line of her scowl. I never had her. My chest crumples under the unbearable weight of the guilt because she's partially right. I may not have dropped her, but I didn't save her either. Kat, no. Marin hurries around us, putting her hands out as if to block her best friend. I saw it happen. It's not Violet's fault. Luella almost killed both of the riders because she couldn't jump the trap.
You fucking dropped her!
Kat surges against Marin.
Sibby saved your precious rider and you dropped our flyer. I will kill you for this.
Knock it off, Marin shouts. You kill her, you kill Ryerson. Everyone knows it.
Fuck, it always comes down to that, doesn't it?
I can, Kat starts. Take one step toward Violet and I'll throw you off this fucking cliff myself, Dane warns, his voice low and menacing. Unlike Ryerson, I don't give a shit who your uncle is.
I'll do it just for fun, Sloane adds.
Riddick, I manage to say around the pain that throbs from my shoulder, then devours the rest of me.
Alive, he answers weakly.
Kat, let it go. Sibby doesn't have long, Marin says, her hand trembling as she reaches for the griffin. Kat breathes deeply, then nods, moving to the griffin's side.
Griffins die with their flyers, Marin explains, her tone softening as she strokes the line where feathers turn to fur. Like Tarn and me.
Sibby lets loose a stuttered three-beat cry, and the entire cliff, both above us and below, echoes it, as though the griffins grieve the loss of the flyer as one. The beat of wings approaches as Dane leads me back from the edge, and I watch the mist, waiting for a flash of orange for Marb and Brennan to arrive.
Put my shoulder back in,
my voice croaks as I glance at Dane.
Shit, are you serious?
He lifts his brows.
Do it, just like when I was 14.
And 17, he mutters.
Exactly, you know how to do it, and we don't have any healers nearby. You don't want to wait for Brennan?
Dane takes hold of my arm.
Brennan will try to mend me first, and Riddick is dying. Now do it,
I snap, bracing for the pain. A strap of leather appears in front of my face.
Bite down,
Marin orders over Sibby's cries. I can't look at him, can't watch his healthy body die just like Liam's had, so I face forward and bite.
One,
Dane lifts my arm slightly and adjusts. Two, he brings my arm out to a 90-degree angle. My teeth mark the leather as I fight the scream working its way up my throat. Riddick has been shot with two arrows. I can handle this.
I'm so fucking sorry,
Dane whispers, putting his other hand between my neck and shoulder.
Three!
He rolls my arm forward and I clench my jaw, my eyes squeezing shut as white-hot pain sends stars flashing across my vision, and he puts the joint back into place. The relief from the worst of the pain is instant, and I remove the leather from between my teeth.
Thank you. Never thank me for that.
He lifts my arm above my head to make sure it's in place, rotates it back down, then bends my elbow, tucking my arm across my chest before sliding his belt off and fashioning a temporary sling.
How is he?
He asks over his shoulder.
Losing blood,
Sloane answers as an orange claw lands on the ledge where the trap had been, and Brennan executes a perfect roll-on landing.
Are you?
He comes running at me, scanning me for blood.
I'm fine. Save Riddick. Fuck.
Brennan levels a look at Dane's leg.
You're next.
It's just a graze. Dane glances down at me.
It just caught the edge of my thigh.
Brennan crouches next to Riddick and starts working.
It's all right,
Marin tells Sibby as the griffin collapses, his head hanging over the edge of the cliff as his cries grow softer.
You have earned an honorable death.
Another set of wing beats fills the air, and I face the mist, waiting for Tarn's disapproving scowl. But I don't feel him any closer than before.
You did not ask me to fetch you,
he says sternly. The mist parts like a scene from a nightmare, and gray, gaping jaws fill my vision, opening wide to reveal dripping teeth that snap closed around Sibby's neck, snatching the griffin from the ledge before falling back into the mist.
My heart stops.
What the fuck?
Sloane whispers.
Wyvern,
I manage to whisper, my head swiveling toward Marin and Kat. They're the only people here who've seen one.
Wyvern, right? Wyvern,
Kat replies, her eyes wide with shock. Marin is still as a statue.
Wyvern! Dane bellows and all hell breaks loose. We can't see anything in the cloud cover,
Taren growls.
But they can see well enough to eat us.
I can already feel him on the move. Thank gods Andarna is in Aracia.
Get up the cliff! I shout at Marin, grasping her shoulder with my uninjured hand and shaking her to snap her out of it. Get Dasha up the cliff!
She blinks, then nods.
Dasha!
Dane yanks me out of the path as the griffin charges forward, and I can only hope the adrenaline rushes enough to get them up the last couple of ascents.
I can't move him, Brennan says, his sight solely focused on Riddick's wounds. I'm blocking most of his pain, but I can't move him, Vi.
And we're sitting ducks here,
Sloane mutters, looking at the mist as more riders and griffins push by.
Go, Riddick whispers, opening his eyes and finding mine. Get off this trail.
I kneel beside him and take his hand. We made a deal, remember? All four of us lived to see graduation. We made a deal.
Riddick,
Sawyer pushes toward us, his eyes bulging with fear as he brings up the last of our squad and tail section begins.
They can't see, Brennan says, his voice tensing as his hands move, snapping one arrow in half and then the second. Atos, the dragons can't see.
On it. Dane looks up at the cliff, and I hold Riddick's hand tight as Brennan slides the first arrow out of his abdomen.
You're on what exactly?
Sawyer snaps at Dane. Kath is relaying to Gaethal that Sienna needs to wield some wind so the riot can see. Dane responds, you can't do anything here, Henrik, so get the others to safety. Sawyer clenches his fists. If you think I'm going to leave my squad mates.
Sounds like your wing leader gave you an order, cadet. Brennan says, his tone flat.
Take Sloane. I look over at her as she draws back, clearly offended.
I had to hold Liam while he died, his dragon already eviscerated by the jaws of a wyvern, and I will not watch his sister suffer the same fate. Get up the fucking cliff!
Sawyer all but lifts Sloane to her feet, and the two join into the steady, hurried march as the clouds begin to thin.
How powerful is Sienna?
I ask Dane quietly, absorbing the pressure of Riddick's squeezing hand as Brennan works the second arrow free. His tense expression answers the question for me. The visibility may be improving, but it's not nearly enough to see what we're up against. And even if it were, without crossbolts, I'm the best weapon we have.
I've already come to that conclusion.
Gusts of air hit my back from the force of Tarn's wings.
Right, I let go of Riddick's hand and brush his hair back up his forehead. You will not die. Do you understand?
He nods, his dark brown eyes fluttering closed as I stand.
Where do you think you're going? Brennan asks, his concentration wavering. I'm the best shot you've got. We both know it.
Fuck, Brennan mutters.
Find every wind wielder we have, I tell Dane as I walk to the brink of the ledge, temporarily stopping traffic as Tarn swings his massive body around to face poor Emil. I think there's a storm wielder in First Wing, not as powerful as my mother, but if we can raise the temperature, it should help clear the clouds.
Violet, Brennan calls out. If we can't clear the clouds, then use them to your advantage. No one here is as powerful as General Sorengale. Come up with another plan.
Ever the tactician.
We could send the entire riot in, Dane suggests.
And if there's one rider on that wyvern, we could lose the entire riot.
I shake my head.
You're wounded. You know that, right?
Dane questions me, glancing at his belt.
And you're a memory reader.
His gaze narrows.
Oh, we're not stating obvious facts?
I study the clouds around us, looking for any break, any sign of blue sky.
Hate to break it to you, but your signet isn't exactly helpful in this situation.
No time for this.
Tarn lays his massive tail beside the ledge while keeping a steady hover.
Would Ryerson let you rush off into battle against gods know how many wyvern, or worse, the Venon who created them, when you're wounded?
His eyebrows rise.
Yes.
I step out onto the midpoint of Tarn's tail, my stomach settling at the familiar territory beneath my boots as I look back over my shoulder at Dane.
That's why I love him.
I don't wait for his response, not when Tarn is a giant target. He holds remarkably steady as I walk forward, navigating his spikes and scales with ease.
The Flyer's death is not your fault,
Tarn tells me as I find my saddle and lower into the seat.
We'll save that for another day.
I fumble with the belt for precious seconds. This fucking thing is nearly impossible with one arm, but I manage by holding the strap in my right hand and fastening with my left. You know I can't wield with one hand, right?
You don't need to tell me your limits.
Tarn dives, and I'm thrown forward in my seat as we plummet through thousands of feet of dissipating clouds.
You can't feel them, can you?
I was aware something felt off, but if I could accurately detect Wyvern, if any of us could, without seeing them, we wouldn't be in this position.
Fair point.
Wind bites at my face and tears streak from my eyes, but I'm not going to waste precious arm movements on getting my goggles from my pack. We emerge from the cloud cover and level out just beneath it.
The ascents are clear,
Tarn says. We will not risk the high ground if there are no riders to defend. With great beats of his wings, we jolt upward, back into the mist.
Are there other dragons out here?
I reach for the buckle of Dane's belt and carefully pull the leather aside to slip my arm free. I'm going to need it as soon as we're done. I don't want to hit anyone by accident, even if hitting the wyvern would probably be an accident, given my aim.
They're all above, guarding the riders.
Good. We fly straight through the thickest part of the cloud, but there's no trace of the wyvern.
Until they, as in, two of them fly by on either side of us, streaks of gray in the otherwise endless white.
Shit! Tarn flies high, pushing up into the blue sky. Clouds stretch from the cliffs over the surrounding landscape. No wonder the riot didn't see the wyvern. They have the perfect cover. And Sienna isn't powerful enough to dissipate all this.
Use it. That's what Brennan suggested.
Wyvern aren't just alive. They're created. They carry a form of energy forced into them by dark wielders. I have an idea.
I approve.
Tarn sails into the cloud cover.
I've told Gaethal to instruct his rider to stop eliminating the clouds and instead push them away from the cliff.
Just from where the path is. Until then, keep the wyvern distracted.
I clutch the pommel of the saddle with my uninjured hand and shove my right hand into my flight jacket between the buttons to stabilize my shoulder as much as possible. Then Tarn dives back into the mist.
Only two that Aitrim can see,
Tarn announces, his wings beating the cloud into little swirl patterns behind us.
The cover has thinned enough to the north to make out their shapes.
A patrol?
Riderless,
he confirms.
Thank you, Sinal.
I lean forward as tears streak from the corners of my eyes.
I know, dragons pay no heed to our gods.
Tarn snorts, following a pattern of swirls similar to his own. He's tracking the wyvern.
You're faster than they are, right?
Fear licks down my spine.
Don't insult me when we're headed into battle.
Right, I mutter to myself.
Feel like using the conduit?
Taren asks as two tails appear ahead. Nope, aiming is detrimental to the goal.
Understood.
His wings beat faster, propelling us to a speed that leaves my stomach behind and narrows my vision as he pulls up above the wyvern to catch their attention. It works, and my stomach hollows as we switch from the predator to the prey.
If there were only one, I'd rip his throat out and call it a day.
I know, but there's no guarantee that there are only two.
Hold on, Silver One!
I buckle down, making myself as small as possible and lying across the saddle to minimize air resistance as Taren moves at a pace I've never experienced. It takes all my effort to breathe, to fight the night at the edge of my vision, to just stay conscious as he bolts out of the clouds, then plummets back into the cover a breath later.
They followed. Great.
My fucking teeth are rattling.
How is that cloud cover? Because I can't wield if I'm passed out. They're almost clear.
I grit my teeth and ignore the throbbing ache of my shoulder. The clouds have to clear the path, or there's every chance I'll kill Riddick and Brennan if they're still on the trail.
We're rolling,
he warns me a second before he does, executing a move that disorients me thoroughly, a move most riders can't hold their seat for. My stomach lurches into my lungs as he levels out, flying back the opposite way and dropping us directly under the wyvern.
I know we're not supposed to question dragons. Then don't.
A set of pointed gray claws falls rapidly toward us.
Taren!
He banks hard right, then climbs quickly.
The clouds have cleared the trail.
My heart speeds to a gallop.
Make sure they're following us. Don't turn around, or you might actually pass out,
he instructs, flying faster. I slide my hand out of my jacket with a wince, then gasp with pain as I rotate my palms downward and open myself to Taren's power. It flows through me, filling my muscles, my veins, the very marrow of my bones, until I am power, and power is me. My skin starts to hum, then sizzle.
We break through the clouds, and I throw my arms wide, pushing past the pain and screaming with it all in the same breath, setting the molten energy within me free.
And for the first time in my life, I force the power downward. Energy erupts through me, searing my skin on the way out as lightning strikes within the cloud below us, webbing out like the many branches of an overgrown briar patch, twisting and turning, drawn to the energy harnessed within the wyvern. Four distinct shapes light up beneath us, two directly under and two closer to the edge of the cliff, flashing brightly with the endless stream of power.
Break free!
Taren demands. I force my palms shut and shove the archive's door in my mind closed, blocking the endless torrent of Taren's power before I end up in the same condition I'd been in at Bezgaeth under Kar and Varish's punishment. The flashing stops.
Go!
I shout down the bond, clutching my right arm with my left as Taren banks deeply to the left and dives for the ground. This time, the wind is a welcome reprieve from the heat of my skin and the burn within my lungs as we pass through the cloud and emerge on the other side. Four wyvern carcasses litter the ground, one in the middle of the very field we'd stood in this morning. Taren flies over, each just long enough to be sure that they are, in fact, riderless, and we're joined by four others in the riot on one last sweep of the area. Then we climb again, soaring through the clouds and coming out at the edge of the cliff where everyone has gathered. Some griffins load into heavy wagons with stumbling steps, while others appear to have lost consciousness on the ground, but their flyers are all standing, as are the squads of riders. Taren quickly locates ours, and riders scurry as he drops to an abrupt landing.
You could have crushed someone,
I lecture.
Could have, but alas, they moved.
I spot Rhiannon and Sawyer with Riddick braced between them, walking him toward Atrum, and breathe a sigh of relief.
What? You thought I'd let your friend die?
Brennan asks, folding his arms and tilting his head up at me from where he stands next to Bodhi and Dane, to the right of Taren's foreleg.
Never doubted you for a second,
I force a smile.
Want to get your ass down here and let me mend that shoulder?
He wields the older brother disapproving stare like the professional he is.
Not particularly, I grimace, and haul Dane's belt back into position, refusing to take the chance that I won't be able to mount again if a mending session knocks me out.
So fucking stubborn,
Brennan mutters, shoving his hands through his hair.
How did you know you could kill them like that?
I didn't.
I breathe through the wave of pain that threatens to pull me under as I let the weight of my shoulder fall into the makeshift sling. Wyvern are created with dark wielder magic, and Felix said something to me about energy fields the other day. I took a chance that the lightning would be drawn to their magic, and Taryn agreed to try. Brennan's jaw drops slightly, and Dane bites back an uncharacteristic smile, reminding me of the years when he cared more about climbing trees than our curfew.
Chance panned out, Bodhi says, flat out grinning.
It did, I nod.
Aren't you going to tell me how brilliant that idea was?
Taryn scoffs.
I chose you last year for that brilliance. And now you'd like to be congratulated like it's something new? How odd.
You're impossible to impress.
I'm a dragon, a black morning star tail, the descendant of—
Yeah, I cut him off before he makes me recite his entire lineage. Kath said there were four of them in there. Dane deftly changes the subject. At least they were riderless. Could you imagine if dark wielders knew we were joining forces with flyers and moving them into Tirindor? Where a dragon just hatched? They'd see us as a ripe little draining target. Bodhi's face falls.
Oh, shit. That's why you were worried. There's no telling who is within a 4-hour flight.
Taryn bites out those last words.
They already know. My stomach twists. That's why they're using riderless wyverns to patrol.
Brennan stills completely, and the color drains from his face.
What?
Dane glances between us. Venin share a collective conscious with the wyvern they create, Brennan says quietly. That's what Takaris' book says.
The book you haven't let me read in the 4 days you've had it?
I touch my fingertips to my head as the dizziness returns.
It's only been 3 days, and you apparently already know,
Brennan counters. And some things are beyond your clearance, cadet, especially information we haven't finished analyzing.
I know because I read the book my father gave me, I argue, and I almost regret the emphasis when he flinches.
He didn't just separate himself from Mom when he changed his name. He distanced himself from Dad.
And Bodhi knows because it's how I killed an entire horde of them at Resson.
I didn't know, Dane interrupts. So if one of them felt that energy pulse, if one of them knows what it means.
Whoever created them knows.
I finish for him, turning my gaze to Brennan.
And you can bet they'll come for us now.
An excerpt from Captain Lara Dural's Guide to Vanquishing the Venin, property of Cliffsbane Academy. It was only in the last 50 years that we realized they were no longer solely coming from the Barrens. They'd begun to take recruits, teaching those who never bonded a griffin to channel what was not theirs to take, to upset the balance of magic by stealing it from the very source. The problem with mankind is we too often find our souls to be a fair price for power. Chapter 45.
Coralie Ryle. Nikolai Panya.
A newly pinned Major De Vera calls out over the frost-covered courtyard, reading from what's become